You're listening to Let's Talk It Through, a podcast about the art and practice of using your voice as a tool for building happier, healthier relationships and deeper self-trust, made especially for folks who wrestle with people-pleasing tendencies. And I'm your host. I'm Michelle. I'm a communication coach for big-hearted, deep thinkers and feelers, and I run things over at The Hearty Fig. Together, we'll explore how to sidestep common communication pitfalls, build confidence in how you show up for tough conversations on your terms, and start creating the kinds of relationships you want and deserve, including your relationship with yourself. Let's get into it. Hello, hello. Welcome back. Today, I want to start off our episode. I want to jump right in, and I want to start us off the way all great podcast episodes start, and that's with an outdated pop culture reference. So I actually had to look this up, but as it turns out, 2015 was the year when Shonda Rhimes' book, The Year of Yes, came out. Do you remember that book? And I was thinking about it the other day and how I remember it being this huge deal, right? Everyone was talking about it. Lots of people were reading it. It was inspiring loads of people to say yes more often. And I just remember thinking at the time, you know, looking at the book title and thinking, a year of yes sounds exhausting. Now, granted, that perspective, of course, had everything to do with the way I had moved through the world up until that point, right? I had a long history of knowing how to keep other people happy and comfortable, of saying yes in the spirit of other people's comfort and happiness. So while I doubt that was the spirit in which Shonda wrote her book, full disclosure, did not read it, this is what we're here to talk about today. Because as a reminder, we are spending both the last couple of weeks and the next couple of weeks focused on discussions about how we can build more balanced relationships. That's sort of the theme for this month. And in my experience, one of the things that I've seen tip the scales out of balance in relationships the fastest is when we have a habit of compulsively, unconsciously saying yes and volunteering to take things on when we'd really rather not. We might say yes out of fear or obligation or when we don't mean it. And that could be a yes to anything from a request for help or RSVPing to an event or an invitation or agreeing to a favor. Could be professional, could be personal. The yeses really run the gamut. And when we end up saying yes to these things when we'd rather say no, things tend to fall wildly out of balance, especially over time as these things add up. More often than not, the short-term comfort of saying yes purely to make someone else happy creates longer-term stress, resentment, and even missed opportunities, both for ourselves and for the people around us. Because while it might not always feel this way in the moment, there's always a positive ripple effect when we make the choice to live in integrity with our needs, our values, and our capacity. And sometimes that involves saying something other than yes. So let's talk about the power of the intentional yes instead of the habitual or the obligatory yes. And that's going to be the focus of our episode today. And we're going to break this up into three key sections. So first, we'll look at why so many of us say yes to too many things and or to the wrong things. And of course, wrong is in air quotes, so we'll talk about that. Then I want to share a personal story about how I recently got to really see and understand firsthand the power of saying yes to the right things. And I have a feeling you might relate to this, but even if you don't, I imagine it will be a helpful example of what I'm talking about. And then we're going to close with some specifics because I love specifics. So I'm going to share three tactical ideas for how you can still be the loving or generous or whatever adjective resonates for you, how you can still be that person and show up as the friend, the partner, the colleague that you want to be without just having to go around saying yes all the time. So let's start with a really basic question, right? Why do we say yes to too many things? You're not going to be surprised, or maybe you will if you haven't listened to the last couple of episodes, but yesing is a form of people-pleasing, and that's what I want to kind of look at first and foremost. You can get a deeper dive on this if you want. You can go back to episode number one, which is where we really laid some groundwork about where people-pleasing comes from and sort of what it is, understanding it in a compassionate way without just pathologizing it, because I know I have some gripes with the way the world likes to talk about people-pleasing.
But basically, we can boil it down by saying there's a compassionate way to understand our people-pleasing behavior. And one of the ways we can do that is by acknowledging these big, powerful, underlying fears that are often at the core of that behavior. So quick recap, those four fears that tend to drive people-pleasing. There's the fear of conflict, or the fear of anger is one. There's the fear of being disliked. There's the fear of being rejected or abandoned. And then there's the fear of losing control or not being needed. And most of the time, at least one of these fears is at the core of any yes that we say when we'd secretly rather mean no. And I love that reminder because it's further proof that we aren't broken. All of us who struggle with a pattern or a history of people-pleasing learned that behavior as a coping tactic, as a way of surviving, as a way of getting along and getting acceptance from our peers or our caregivers or love from our parents when we were much younger. They were once really wise tactics that helped us ward off pain and suffering and fear. And still, now as adults in any given situation, we have the power to make more conscious choices about whether that same compulsion or desire to keep other people happy and comfortable is really truly the right choice for us in any given scenario. There's this little nugget of wisdom that I heard recently and I loved it. It came from Randy Buckley. She's a coach who focuses on boundaries for kind people. And she said, this is the quote that I love. She said, "Don't offer what you hope someone will decline." And if you're anything like me, you heard that and felt a little hiccup in your gut of like, whoop. I've been known to not follow that advice, but I think it's a really powerful reminder for us to come back to and ask ourselves, how often am I doing that? How often am I putting a yes out there because it will save face, because it will save my reputation, because it will make other people happy and comfortable, when really I'm hoping that they'll do the heavy lifting, they'll read my mind, they'll say no when I want them to, they won't take me up on that thing. How often are we falling into that pattern? My guess is it's happening more often than we'd like to admit, but that's again where I want to look today at the power of the intentional yes instead of the habitual yes, because there really is a difference. It doesn't mean we have to go from all yeses to all nos, but we can be more discerning about what deserves a yes from us versus believing that it's our job to always say yes because it's what people want to hear. So I thought a great way to illustrate the power of an intentional yes would be to share a personal story. And this one actually happened pretty recently. So to set the scene a little bit, I have a group of friends. I'm incredibly lucky. These are people who I met in my early 20s at my very first job. We all met working for a performing arts nonprofit organization in the DC area. And it was sort of at that time of life where we were in that Friends chapter. When I say Friends, I'm referring to the TV show Friends. We were all kind of in our early to mid 20s. Many of us were living together. All of us were living really close to each other, which meant, you know, we carpooled to work. We spent all our free time together on the weekends. It was really that first kind of special experience of having chosen family around me, which was particularly important and meaningful for me because I had just moved to the East Coast a few years prior. And I look back on that time with just so much fondness and appreciation for really how special it was. And luckily, that group is still largely connected and the friendships are still intact and doing well. Though, of course, we're in our 30s now and a lot of life has happened between when that all started and where we are now. There have been weddings, there have been moves across state lines, houses have been bought, new jobs have been started, there are new babies here. And in fact, one of my closest friends from that group just had a baby last year. Now, this friend is one of my favorite people in the world, and it went without saying that I really wanted to help and show support during that really special and exciting time in her life and in her family's lives. So first, I'm gonna tell you what I did in this scenario. And then I'm going to tell you what I could have done differently and why it matters. So out of a combination of sheer love, genuine excitement for them, recognition of some of the needs that come along with having a baby, i.e. the need for someone to help throw you a baby shower, or at least that being kind of a cultural norm and a desire for someone to help throw you a baby shower, I had some overzealousness to help, and I also had values and still have these values that are really truly important to me, you know, things like showing support, offering help, showing up for the people who matter to me. Through a combination of all of these things,
I offered to help plan a baby shower for this new baby that was arriving, and I will say up front, it went great. And still, I also learned some things about myself. So first, thank goodness it just so happened that this offer to help plan a baby shower went down over brunch when we were out with a few other friends. So there were actually two of us who made this offer together. And the other friend who volunteered to help just so happens to be an event planning genius. Meanwhile, I'm more of an anxious, introverted ball of stress and neuroses and self-doubt when it comes to planning big events. Red flag number one. So with all of that in mind, it all basically played out the way you might expect. Our event planning friend took the lead and did an absolutely wonderful job of coordinating and decorating and throwing a love-filled shower. I chipped in and helped with a few small details that were more squarely in my introvert wheelhouse. And along the way, I told myself all kinds of stories about how I wasn't doing enough or how I was a bad friend, you know, things like that. Don't you just love the anxious brain chatter? And by the way, if that idea of like being a bad friend and telling yourself that story speaks to you, I'm just going to give a little plug for there's a recent episode of Glennon Doyle's podcast, We Can Do Hard Things, where she talks about adult friendship. And I found it such a relief, such a balm to hear these grown women who I admire talk about how they too tell themselves different versions of that narrative about how they're a bad friend. And it was a really awesome episode. So if that speaks to you at all, highly recommend, but file that away for a second. So going back to this baby shower, in the end, like I said, it all turned out great. But here's where it got interesting. When it got closer to her due date, I realized I hadn't seen anything about anyone organizing a meal train for this friend and her family for when they had a newborn at home and when they were going to be coming home from the hospital. So for the uninitiated, when I say meal train, when someone has either had a baby or maybe they're grieving or recovering from surgery, a meal train is a great way to sort of rally their community together and organize either a list or a calendar where folks can take turns signing up and volunteering to bring food by, drop off meals, and help feed the person or the family involved during a difficult or an overwhelming season of life. So I saw this hadn't been set up, and I didn't want to step on toes, but I did check in, and sure enough, the task was up for grabs, and I told her I would happily take care of it. As soon as I started working on getting that meal train set up, it occurred to me. I was working in my zone of genius. Organizing logistics, putting systems in place, keeping people fed, these things are squarely in my wheelhouse. They bring me joy and they come fairly easily to me. So compare that to my stress narrative while doing my small part to help with a baby shower, and suddenly it was crystal clear to me that not all yeses are created equal. Yes, I was genuinely happy to do both. Yes, I feel good about the choice to support a close friend in both of these ways. And one of these projects absolutely felt more like ease, flow, and fun than the other. Not because one is universally easier or more enjoyable, but because of my unique combination of strengths, joys, and gifts. I got to feel what it's like to be in alignment with my gifts and talents. It's how I found purpose, ease, and joy. And if that's not a sign of a worthwhile yes, I don't know what is. So there are a few big takeaways here that I really want to highlight. First, like I said before, not all yeses are created equal, which is why it's important to know your strengths and to know what brings you joy. This is how you can give yourself a chance to say yes to more of the right things and fewer of the wrong ones. And I'll elaborate on what I mean by wrong in a minute. The second takeaway I want to highlight is that when we do say yes to the right things, they can feel easy, they can feel fun, they can feel joyful, they can fill us up, like we're contributing in a meaningful way and letting our gifts shine for everyone's benefit. And the third takeaway, saying yes to something we're not actually well suited or equipped or truly willing to do can actually be a disservice. And in fact, it can be a true act of generosity to let someone else whose gift it is take on the thing that makes your stomach sink so that their strengths and gifts can shine through. The other thing I want to call out here is that there's also a trust the universe sort of component at play here that I would invite you to consider, even if that sort of makes you furrow your brow a little bit. What could it look like to trust or believe that when you say yes to the right things
and exercise some discernment as to when and whether you say yes to something, that you create some space for magic. As in, trusting that not only might you be helping that opportunity go to someone who's perfectly suited to fill that need with ease and joy and with their own zone of genius, but that you're also creating space for the recipient of that favor to receive that kind of love and support from someone who's delighted to give it. I think there's a certain scarcity mindset to believing that no one else can swoop in to help or save the day like we can. We might tell ourselves that we're somehow responsible or beholden to agree to every ask or favor that comes across our figurative desk, when in fact that's not the case. Now, the goal here is not to shirk responsibility, right? This is my asterisk. We're not talking about trying to shirk responsibility. We're not talking about trying to bypass the need for community care when it's inconvenient. And we're not even trying to suggest, I'm not even trying to suggest that we should only ever agree to something when it feels 100% joyful. Because guess what? Sitting down to do your taxes with your partner when you agreed you would isn't going to feel joyful, for most of us anyway. And neither is following through on your share of household chores or stepping into a new form of activism that totally aligns with what you believe in but might be pushing you outside your comfort zone. There may be things you follow through on in your relationships because they deeply align with your values and or their commitments you made, even if they don't feel quite as fun in the moment as you thought or hoped they might. What I'm really getting at here is an invitation to take a closer look at and even let go of the idea that in every scenario, with every ask or favor or need, that it has to be you. And if you are in the habit of saying yes to too many things, or even when you don't necessarily want to, you might quietly believe on some level that it does have to be you, either because it's somehow your responsibility to say yes, or you were the first or next person they asked, or because saying no sounds awful and uncomfortable. But the question I want to ask you with that is, what could it look like to let go of the idea that when a favor's been asked, it automatically becomes your responsibility? As we move into the sort of third and final section of this episode, I want to talk about some specific ways to be wildly loving and generous as a friend, as a partner, as a colleague, no matter the relationship. What can it look like to show up the way we want to show up in alignment with our values and our gifts without just feeling like we have to say yes all the time? Because when you carry around a belief that your job is to say yes because that's the only way to prove that you're kind or generous or caring, it really takes away your sense of agency over your life. The truth is, there are other ways to show up with a generosity of spirit, other ways to show you care and offer meaningful support to the people and the movements that matter to you. And so I want to look at some of those other ways so that you can feel empowered to interrupt this habitual cycle of saying yes and to exercise some more discernment. And really, this is also that you can save your yeses for when they count, when they're aligned, and when they're right for you. So I've got three ideas that I want to share of alternatives, things that you can do to be wildly loving and generous that aren't saying yes. So the first one, and I love this one, I couldn't think of a great term. I'm sure there's a better one, but where I landed is be a directory. So think about it. If you had a friend who absolutely hated cooking, and you unwittingly, you didn't know this, and you somehow ended up asking them to plan and prepare a dinner menu for a really high stakes event that you were hosting, wouldn't you want to know that they hated cooking? Wouldn't you kind of want them to tell you when you asked? Would you want them to be secretly stressing out and floundering and trying to deliver on something that really isn't in their wheelhouse? And I'm going to make an assumption here, but wouldn't you so much rather have them say to you up front, you know, I'm actually kind of a mess in the kitchen, but I know this really great local catering company, or there's this awesome food blog I found a while back that has a really great article on how to put a menu together. Let me dig that up and send it to you. There is an actual skill and a generosity in being able to point someone toward a better resource. That resource does not always have to be you. And in fact, like we just talked about, it can be a disservice when you volunteer for things that you're not a fit for. So when you're tempted to say yes, where you feel out of your depths or beyond your capacity, try to remind yourself that it can be wildly generous to point someone toward an awesome resource that isn't you and that's better suited and even possibly delighted to help them out instead. The second way that you can be wildly generous and loving without just saying yes is to assume what I call a yes and posture without overextending. So let me explain a little bit. This makes me think, this kind of came from years ago, I read Tina Fey's memoir, Bossy Pants. And I love that book, by the way. It's like one of my all-time favorites. I'm a huge 30 Rock fan. But in that book, she talks a lot about her improv background and her training in improv. And I know many of us have heard of that cardinal rule that comes from improv, which is this idea of yes and. And if you're not familiar with it, the idea is basically be a contributor. Like if you're in an improv scene and someone's starting a scene, you don't want to, if someone starts a scene by saying, look at that balloon over there, you don't want to say, that's not a balloon, that's a hamburger. Your job is to accept what they've started building and add to it. So be a collaborator, be a contributor. To me, a yes and posture is about maintaining a spirit of support and cooperation while remembering that it's okay to focus on the spirit of the ask rather than the specifics. So in other words, think about the bigger picture of where this ask is coming from and see if you can come up with something that you are comfortable offering in that same spirit. So going back to my example earlier with my friend in the baby shower, this could have sounded like if she had asked about planning the baby shower, if that had come up in conversation, I could have said, I'm so excited for you. I absolutely want to help you celebrate your growing family, because that's what a baby shower is all about, right? It's about celebrating and bringing people together and showering the family with love and with gifts and with celebration. So I could have said, I absolutely want to be part of this like community effort to celebrate your growing family. To be perfectly honest with you, event planning sort of makes me a nervous wreck. It makes my stomach tie in knots, but I'd love to help you design the invitations or organize a meal train if that would be helpful. And that can start a conversation where you're building on ideas, you are going back and forth, you're finding the right thing for you, as opposed to assuming the specifics of the first iteration of their request, when in fact they might not be married to the idea of you being the one to plan that event or do that thing. They may just be seeking support, and you're totally within bounds to be a contributor in that conversation of what support looks like. I also think this is about remembering that we aren't bound to the specifics of a request just because they were the first draft of that request, right? We can come in and kind of be an editor. Part of a yes and posture is contributing and offering alternatives and ideas and being that collaborative partner to possibly build a new iteration of that ask, one that is much more in alignment with your skills, your capacity, your gifts, your boundaries, all that stuff. And then the third idea of something you can do that's not saying yes, that still allows you to show up as wildly loving and generous, is that when it's a no for you, say no clearly and say it early. I think it's really easy to underestimate the value of knowing the truth and being armed with that information, even when it wasn't necessarily what we were hoping for, if we're the one asking, right? So setting realistic expectations and giving people time to prepare or adjust is so much kinder than stringing them along with false hope. And it's understandable that we might want to delay that delivering of bad news. Like if someone asks something of us and we're just not able to deliver on it, it seems like that no is going to be really disappointing. It's going to be bad news. We want to kind of delay that as long as possible because it feels like that conversation is going to be harsh and unpleasant for them. But I think we forget that it can actually be this really helpful and valuable thing to know the reality and to know it in time. And here's the part about this one that I think is even more powerful. Transparency is generous. When we're upfront about what's real and what's true, even when it's uncomfortable for us to share it and we suspect that it's going to be disappointing, we're respecting the other person's autonomy and we're respecting our own humanity. Plus, I always find it's a relief to just get things out in the open sooner rather than later, rip off the Band-Aid. It's better for everyone, truly. But by being willing to tell people the truth, even when it's uncomfortable or scary for us, you're giving people a gift by showing them that they can trust you and take you at your word so that when you do say yes, they know that you mean it. So again, I think it's really normal for us to have internalized this idea that a yes is the most generous and most giving way to show up and show support and show care and to be there for the people we care about. And also, I hope that this opened up some more nuanced questions of what else can it look like to espouse our values if our values are things like being supportive, being in community, showing up for people, being helpful. Like, if those are things that are important to us, what other options do we have for living in alignment with those values that don't keep us beholden to just saying yes anytime something is asked of us? Because the truth is, we have choices, even when it feels like we don't. And I think the more we're aware of these alternative options we have so that yes doesn't feel like the only way out, we have more choices available to us so that we're not just saying yes and building up that quiet resentment under the surface that can really start to strain our relationships. Hopefully this gave you some ideas, some things to think about, maybe some things to journal about. But my hope is that this helps you get to a place where the yeses in your life feel true for you, they feel doable, they don't come with hidden resentment, and they're allowing you to show up with the fullness of your gifts. They're letting you find ease and joy and show up the way you really want to without all that other hidden gunk underneath it. And I'll see you here next week. Thanks for joining me for today's episode. If you're enjoying the show, let the overlords at Apple Podcasts know. Seriously though, it goes a really long way if you subscribe and leave a rating and a review. Thanks in advance. If you're looking for even more support around the conversations popping up in your life and relationships, head on over to theheartyfig.com. That's the theheartyfig.com. And that's where you'll find an interactive, I like to think of it as a part quiz, part workshop that'll offer you some personalized support based on your particular situation and what's chirping you up about it. The best part, it's 100% introvert friendly and can be done totally on your own time with as many pauses as you need. Most of all, thanks for being here. See you next week.